How would you like to improve your quality of life through improving the relationship with yourself? Charisma Veer will tell us how to do this. And what's so special about Charisma is she's a holistic wellness coach and author who helps people move away from all or nothing self-help and toward healing, self-trust, and quality of life. And Charisma, tell us about how can someone optimize their relationship with themselves, and what does that even mean?
Heal podcast with Lily Petrescu shares longevity and anti-aging techniques to stay young forever, increase energy, overcome addiction, and live your longest, best life ever, shared by world's most innovative alternative and traditional health thought leaders, healers, and doctors. Discover quantum healing strategies to heal your mind, body, and soul.
It's interesting you would choose optimize because I use softer language when I'm dealing with people, right? So I think what many of us have suffered with or struggle with or whatever is we live within a society that doesn't give us permission to prioritize the relationship that we have with ourselves. So we end up kind of going through life a little bit disconnected from what's really going on inside ourselves. And if we're disconnected from what's really going on inside ourselves, we're not going to be able to actually tend to it. And we're not going to actually be able to make decisions that are based in the moment from who we really are, meeting ourselves where we are at. So it impacts our ability to make the best decisions for ourselves. It impacts our relationships with other people, and it impacts our ability to create the kind of changes that we want because we don't have an attuned relationship to ourselves where we actually know what is going on for ourselves, what is super important to ourselves, what it is that we need to actually make the changes that we need to make, right? What is our energy levels? What's going on for ourselves? All these different kinds of things that we may pay attention to in other people, but probably weren't ever encouraged to pay attention to in ourselves.
Thank you. So, how can someone start improving their relationship with themselves? What's the blueprint for someone to start doing that?
I think there's a lot of things that you can do, and you know, like this is where it does get on. It's not necessarily generic advice. A lot of this can I tend to do one-on-one because it'll really depend on the person and where they're at. But if you're really disconnected from yourself and you're somebody who holds yourself to perfectionistic standards and you prioritize your relationship with other people and perhaps many of your day-to-day efforts is externally based, doing things for other people, or because you think you should, or because your self-worth is tied up in needing to do those things, then I think the first steps are really to just start to build that attunement with yourself. And you know, for me, that started with simply closing my eyes once a day and doing what I called an expanded body scan. Many of us have heard of a body scan, but for me, it helps when I close my eyes. Other people might do it with their eyes open, but I would go inside and I would just take a minute and I would go, okay, how do I feel? Like what sensations am I feeling? Are my shoulders tight? Is my stomach upset? Are my muscles feeling fatigued? What's going on sensation-wise? What's going on in my mind? Are my thoughts racing? Do I feel kind of like faded out? Do I have that mental anxiety or stress going on? What's the environment there? Emotionally, how am I feeling? You know, like what feelings are here right now? Am I in fear? Am I in distress? Am I in joy? What is going on? So just taking that moment to actually like really check in with yourself and find out what's going on the inside. And that's like a powerful first step. That's something I do throughout the day now. And it allows me to adapt, right? Make a choice like you know, I had X and Y and Z committed today, and if I continue to check in through the day, I can decide is it good to stick with that? Do I need to adjust the plan? Do I need to add some self-care in after or before? What is it that I need to do all of these things that I have asked myself to do because I'm in connection to myself and aware of what my energy levels are, what my emotional state is, what my mental state is, and what my physical state is.
Thank you.
I have another one too, if you'd like.
Yes, please.
I actually turned this practice into a journal. I called it the Ways I Showed Up for Myself, a 60-day self-gratitude practice. It's a companion journal to the Light Switch Myth. And it was a practice that I started practicing about 5 years ago and continue to do. Actually, I just picked it up after I made the journal, because so for many of us at the end of the day, we lay down, and what happens is our brain starts to go over the day from a lens of threat and failure, basically. Like, oh, what, oh, did I say the wrong thing? Oh, I forgot to do that. Oh, I didn't do that. Oh, that big thing's happening tomorrow or coming, or oh, I don't know how I'm going to deal with that. And so this is actually sort of one of, you know, our brain is trying to keep us safe, and it's trying to make sure we're staying on top of the things that we need to. But what happens is that we're going to bed in this state of threat. It impacts our sleep, which reduces our capacity to do all the things that we need to do the next day, which then creates more things to kind of, like, you know, berate ourselves or stress about the next night. So the simple practice, you don't need the journal to do it. You can just ask yourself these questions, but literally take 5 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes a night at bedtime to sit down and check in with yourself. Where did you show up for yourself today? And this is such a personal practice because, you know, maybe it was really, really hard for me to say no, or maybe it was really, really hard for me to say yes, or maybe it was really took so much courage for me to go to the dentist. These things are not about what would be hard for you or hard for my mother or hard for anybody else. They are what was actually hard for me. So I'll ask myself, there's 9 prompts in the journal. One is, what was hard today? Where did you struggle? Emotionally, mentally, physically, it doesn't matter, but you'll know what was hard for you. What took extra courage today? You know, what was one thing you were able to maintain? I find as a society, we're often setting the bar to the next thing and never give ourselves credit for the things that we've already created a change and are sticking at. What was one thing I was able to add in, or what was one thing I was able to let go? And with the letting go, it doesn't have to be a, like, a 100%. Maybe you just let go of a little bit of anger or resentment for like 10 minutes or something. But all these different kinds of things that we learn to start to appreciate ourselves. What happens at the end of the day is we go to bed now in touch with our own agency, and it builds a little bit of confidence, and it creates sort of a bit of a hopefulness, because it's like, oh, wow, yeah, I did something that was hard, or oh, okay, you know. And then that also, that feeling of being seen and heard, which we often don't get because we won't share those kinds of things with other people, because we don't think they'll get it, or we fear we might be judged for that or whatever, is in that feeling seen and heard, we feel supported, which actually then makes it easier and starts to snowball towards us being able to do more and more of those things and kind of build on it. Because then, you know, rather than beating ourselves up because we did something at 10%, if we can give ourselves credit that we did it at 10%, it builds, you know. Whereas when we beat ourselves up for it, it's just like that just makes it heavier and harder to try again, because, you know, we're just feeling layered by guilt, shame, and pressure, and you know, nobody really responds well to being treated that way by other people, and yet many of us have treated ourselves that way our entire lives.
Thank you. Why is it so important to have this kind of attunement to self? Why is it so important to kind of like listen to ourselves at night or, you know, like on a regular basis?
I think, as you know, human beings, we all need to feel seen, heard, and supported. And you know, it's been shown in research with children over and over again that encouragement, understanding, those go far greater than fear and pressure do. You know, fear and pressure work in the short term. You might be able to get yourself to, like, you know, give up the sugar cereal for broccoli for like a week or whatever. But it's if it's coming from a place of fear, and I should, and I'm not good enough, and I'd better, it's not going to last. Whereas if you're like, oh wow, you know, like I really want to live a healthier life, and I don't have very much energy lately, so I wonder what I could do to support myself. These are important things to me. So I think I will, like, you know, swap out the sugar crisp for the broccoli, you know, like once this week, and see how that goes. It's But it's also, as human beings, like, we need encouragement, we need support and nurturing. And every client I've ever worked with, they all know how to do this for other people. This is all how they treat their friends, their partners, their family, their children. And yet they have not had the permission, I think, or the opportunity to treat themselves that way. And so when we do learn how to do that, it creates changes that are sustainable, because we're doing them because we want to, not because we have to. We're coming in and we are being kind to ourselves. We are offering compassion, and that allows us to feel like really supported. And we all need support. It's something like 80% more likely to be successful in creating a change if you have support, like proper support, right? And so it creates this internal environment where you're not doing things to be good enough. You already know that you are good enough, and these things become out of choice, and they become joyful. You know, like, I'm not doing this because I have to, which builds resentment and anger and all kinds of other things that just can actually impact our health and stuff like that. I'm doing these things because I want to. And, you know, like, the other point I like to sort of go on is the critic has been there for a reason. You know, it's been there to keep us safe. It's been there to try to help us do better, you know, but we it's okay to outgrow the critic, you know, and it might never go away. But for me, what I really came to realize was the critic has a very narrow lens. When it's making judgments about me or calling me names or putting myself down, it is not taking anything into context. It doesn't consider whether or not I got a good night's sleep. It doesn't consider how many other things are on my plate. It doesn't consider my history with things. It doesn't consider how well I'm doing in other areas. It just focuses in with this very narrow lens and makes a judgment. And it's those judgments actually hurt, you know, whether we're numb to it or not, they hurt, which actually, you know, makes it harder to do other things. And compassion doesn't mean letting ourselves off the hook. Compassion, we can be accountable, but it's actually taking a step back and looking at the full picture. Like, okay, why didn't you go to the gym today? What was going on, right? And if we meet ourselves with compassion and the goal is important to us, then we don't just give up the goal. What we do is we look at, okay, what could I do? All right, these things happened today, and so we didn't do that. Well, how could I support you in being able to do that tomorrow? Because I know this is really important to you. So how can we make this easier for you? And if you come in with like that support, how can I help you, rather than the, oh, you messed up, you know, we respond better, you know, and it frees up our energy, it regulates our nervous system, so then that actually lends to capacity and agency as opposed to dampening it.
Thank you. How can someone who feels unsupported, how can they start improving the quality of their life? Like, for example, for a really long time, I remember that I felt unsupported. And one thing that kind of changed my perspective was meeting this author of a book called Happy Money. And he sold 8 million books on this topic. And he was talking about how in his community, he has 2,000 volunteers that are put into a lottery. And when they win, they have the opportunity to invest $2,000 in order to clean his house and his center, where he has like a seminar where he runs the workshop. And he also has like people investing $10 a month to support him for his amazing work, and he gives them nothing. And I was like really so impressed by this you know, community that he has created where people support him. And I said, you know, what can I do to be more supported? And he told me, well, you just need to create more value for the people, for the community that you are, you know, that you have. And that's how at some point this community will support you back as well. And I, for the first time, have been picked up at the airport by a super fan. And it has happened in multiple cities. Okay. And this is like a tiny little drip of of a mindset shift that I'm creating. But I want to see this at a larger scale where I feel supported by millions of people. And I'm wondering, like, how can someone do that? How can someone go from feeling like completely unsupported, where they feel like they get zero support, to, you know, gradual support where they feel like at least some friends are able to help them when it comes to a difficult situation? And then when they become like, you know, a bigger, I don't know, superstar, celebrity, and have even more people support them in their work.
Yeah, well, you know, like I've studied a lot of the laws of abundance and manifestation and spiritual principles, and then with my coach, what I firmly believe is that you take what he's doing, but it starts with yourself. I firmly believe that you need to do the work with yourself so that you have learned how to support yourself in all those kinds of ways you wish to be supported out in the world. And that energetically you've become attuned to yourself. You've learned how to treat yourself that way. So you've also gotten very familiar and comfortable with that's what you actually deserve. And then energetically, you're putting that out into the universe and people respond to it. And that starts to build that kind of a support or an ecosystem in there. You know, I recently thought about that saying, you know, you can't love anybody else until you love yourself. And I would sort of change that a little bit. I would kind of say you can't actually receive, like really deeply receive, the love of other people until you have learned to love yourself unconditionally. Because seriously, if we haven't done it for ourselves and that's not how we treat ourselves, like on a core energetic level, we're putting out a different message for one thing, but two, we don't actually know what it is, so we don't know how to recognize it. And if we're uncomfortable giving it to ourselves, you know, like if there's blocks between us actually treating ourselves with unconditional love, whether or not we know them, those are going to get transmitted out into the world to other people. Does that make sense?
Yes. So how does someone show themselves that kind of self-love? Because I remember for a really long time, I used to post on social media and I used to hate the sound of my voice. And sometimes I would speak at large conferences and I would hate to listen to what I had to say. And even sometimes now, let's say I get invited to speak at a lot of family office investment summits, you know, where there's a lot of multimillionaires and really special people and celebrities and so on and royal family members. And I look at that sometimes and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't do better. And I'm still looking at that with not full acceptance of what I did or, you know, of my performance there. And I'm wondering, like, how can someone reach this kind of level of self-love, unconditional self-love for themselves and what they do?
Well, that's a pretty nuanced thing, but, you know, we can't really cover in the time of a podcast, but I'm not one for quick, easy fixes. But I would say that learning to love yourself unconditionally is not just a decision. It's an action. So it's when you go to your seminar and you said something that you just knew was not the right thing to say, right? You meet yourself with love and you go like, oh, Lily, oh, I know that you wished you hadn't have said that or whatever. That didn't seem like the perfect thing to say. But you know what? Like, you know, I kudos for you for showing up and trying. Like, way to go. You know, I know all this stuff is really important to you. I know how much work you put into it and everything like that. And I know it feels a little bit difficult that it didn't go exactly the way you want. But you know what? I love you anyway. It's cool. Let's meet ourselves where we're at. So we're not perfect today. And a little secret is we will never be perfect, you know. But, you know, like I appreciate what you brought to the table today. And, you know, maybe that even to have that eye that, you know, maybe your imperfection actually reached some people that your polishedness wouldn't have, right? But it's to learn to see, we want to see the places where there's room for improvement. But without that harsh judgment kind of thing, it's just like, oh, wow, I'd really like to do better there. But that meeting ourselves where we're at involves a little bit of patience and a little bit of curiosity. So we want to cultivate responding to ourselves with understanding. Like, and that's when I use the word compassion, that's what I mean, is it's looking at the bigger picture, right? And it's meeting yourself where you're at. Like, is it okay that you're where you are at right now? And you are either going to get exactly where you think you're going to go, or maybe somewhere even better, right? You know, allowing things to unfold the way that they are, but not making your lover, you treating yourself with kindness and compassion and care based on your performance or how well you did or didn't do. You know, it's that you get to offer yourself that kindness, that love, that unconditional regard and care, regardless of what you've done or how well of a job that you have done, you know, and that's because you deserve it, right? And we remove that self-love from a conditional place of like, oh, I'm only deserving of love or approval or wealth or any of this if I do X, Y, and Z, or success means X, Y, and Z. But like, what if it's just like, no, you know what? I'm perfect. Or, you know, like, I'm absolutely lovable and worthy of taking care of and appreciating and celebrating in this moment, regardless of what I do, because I am a human being, you know? And then we can go deeper to appreciate. Like, I've yet to meet anybody who doesn't actually pretty much try their best all the time. And most people are trying to add value to the world. There's so many things that we can be grateful to ourselves and appreciative of ourselves, but we don't have to do that with blinders towards the parts of ourselves that we would like to improve. But, you know, my journey of healing, one of the biggest things I came to learn was that healing and wholeness didn't come from actually fixing or getting rid of parts of myself. It came from learning how to be in relationship with those parts of myself I always thought I had to get rid of. You know, like, what would an example be like, maybe insecurities, right? You know, like when we identify that we have insecurities, we think, oh, I shouldn't have those. Those are bad. And I don't want to show anybody those. And we try to get rid of them, you know, but what I really learned about healing and about unconditional self-love is like, no, I can recognize you're there. So when they come up now, I have a different response. Like, I kind of have this vision of letting all these aspects of myself be at the table. I don't let them run the show, but I respond to them all with care. I go like, okay, I understand why you feel that way. I hear you. I get you. You know, maybe later tonight we'll take a little downtime or a little bit of care, you know, or give you a little bit of attention, or maybe we'll talk to a friend who can, you know, like help or whatever. Like that's the key, is to not let them run the show, but to actually acknowledge them. And that's the being in relationship with them. I don't think any of us have anybody in our life who is perfect, that there isn't one little thing or two little things about them that we don't necessarily, you know, think is the greatest, but we have learned to be kind about those things, you know, and accept that those are parts of that person. And really, maybe we don't even want them to change because all of those things make up the beautiful person that they are. And that's kind of the attitude towards ourselves that we want to foster.
Thank you. So imagine I go to an event and I feel fear and perhaps a little not good enough and a little not smart enough and maybe a little bit not pretty enough. I don't always feel that, but let's say a little aspect of it, let's say a fear comes where, let's say I'm part of an investment panel and I'm not like proper investor, you know, like, yeah, I do some property investing, but I'm not like, you know, investing millions or anything like that. And I'm, you know, in a panel.
Yeah, a little bit of imposter syndrome going on. Yeah.
Yeah. So okay, how does someone kind of accept that all of those feelings and all those negative emotions are there and not let them run the show?
I do think that takes a little bit of practice and a little bit of work, right? Because I feel like those parts actually need to trust that you are going to listen to them, right? And that you're not just trying to get rid of them. Because I think by and large, most of us in those situations, we just try to tune that part out, right? We just try to stuff it down, tune it out, get rid of it, because we really see it as a threat to what we're doing, right? You know? So it can take a little bit of time, but the way that I do situations like that is I hold my hand. Like, nobody can see that I'm holding my hand, but I go like, oh, this is scary for you. Okay, I understand that. And all the compassionate lens, the bigger picture is like, I know what my own history is. I know where and why I'm sensitive to certain things, you know. I know why some things are like more difficult for me than other things. So I can be that person who really understands and be my best friend in that situation. And I will literally imagine myself like holding my hand or holding those younger parts of me close inside and just like, okay, yes, this is very scary, but we're doing it because it's important, you know? And that's the being at the head of the table. That's the driving the bus, so to speak. But we can do that with care, like to value and appreciate that those other parts of us, they have those feelings. Like, we don't have to deny them. And I find they're more freedom, and that they impact us less when we do acknowledge them. So you walk into your conference, right? You notice some of that fear going on. If you take a moment within yourself to discuss, like, oh, okay, Lily, this is hard. You're scared. Okay, I gotcha. I know you're scared. So I'm here with you. We got this, right? You know, those parts probably won't have to keep screaming at you because they already got your attention. Whereas when we ignore our anger, our fear, our anxiety, any of those kinds of things, my experience and most of the people I've talked to experience is they just get louder and louder until they have our attention. And then it goes sideways, right? You try to not deal with it and it goes sideways. And these aspects of ourselves, I don't think they actually need like huge dramatic kind of tending to it. It can be simply enough to, like, you know, walk into the bathroom, take a couple of deep breaths, put your hand on your heart, go, oh yeah, this is hard, but you know what, I gotcha, you know, we'll binge watch our favorite show when we get home. Let's just make it through this.
Thank you. One interesting thing about that is that I actually train people how to speak with confidence and charisma, and that's the thing that makes it more shocking, that I'm kind of going through the same thing, where the thing I'm worried about is not remembering the entire speech that I had prepared. And actually what I've had happen one time is I prepared for one question and the interviewer asked me another question, even though he asked me in advance, he told me what question he was going to ask. And I was like, it took me like a few seconds to like, really, oh my God, what am I going to answer to this thing? You know? So
that attuned relationship to self that I'm talking about, the more you work on that, the more like what happens is you develop the confidence and the agency that you don't have to have it all figured out because you know how to adapt in the moment. You know, like if you're attuned and you know what's going on for you, it's just like, okay. And if you're firmly grounded into what it is that you have to offer, that speech can be a guideline. I have some notes sitting over here, but I'm talking from my heart, from my experience, right? You know, and I have the confidence. You know, when I first started doing some of these podcasts, I was like a little bit over prepared, you know, and now I'm just like, no, the way I prepare now is making sure I've had some food, making sure I'm well rested, doing a little bit of grounding. And then I let myself speak because I can speak about the things that we're talking about, or many things actually, right? So the confidence lies in what's inside me and not necessarily like the speech itself, if that makes sense, right? There's a saying that I love. So the bird that lands and rests on the very thin branch, trust is not in the branch, it's trust is it's in its wings, you know? And we were talking about perfectionism. I laugh because, you know, I spent decades trying to get things perfect. And when I figured out there is no perfect, so that me, who wanted to get things right, was actually using a model that was always going to fail, like just always going to fail. It's just like, whoa, okay, well, that's not as wise as I had thought it was. And I further, you know, like I used to agonize about decisions and now I don't. I make the best decision I can in any given moment based on my internal feedback and my external feedback. I make the best decision, but I know now there's no perfect decision. And if I make the wrong decision, I will simply correct. You know, I'll be like, oh, well, I thought this was the right thing. Apparently it was not the right thing. So let's self-correct, right? We'll get this going in the right direction. We'll correct for it. We'll make, because that's, I think, and most of us have that skill, right? But how many of us spend so much time agonizing over trying to make the right perfect decision? And there is no such thing. Not that we don't want to think about it and try to make wise mind decisions, but at the end of the day, there's no point losing sleep about the perfect decision, because you're likely going to be able to correct it if you don't make the right decision anyway.
Thank you. One interesting thing is that once I actually start speaking, then I'm relaxed. And I blow everyone's minds with what I say, you know? And even though I do, I'm always second guessing and thinking, oh, I could have done better. I could have prepared better. I could have said this. I forgot this aspect that was really important to the message. But overall, everyone always says, oh my God, you were mind blowing. Everything you said was amazing. And following up from this, I want to ask you, how does someone actually heal this desire to be perfect? Because it's like every time I run an event, every time I speak, I'm always thinking, I could have done better. I'm always filled with shame and guilt and feeling sorry for myself, so much so that sometimes I feel the need to hide myself for 3 months. Like, and when I say hide, I mean, like, let's say if I organize a big event, like, even if people come to me and say, wow, I had a great time, and oh my God, I met these amazing people, or I closed this deal, or whatever.
It's not hitting home that. Because you don't feel like it was good enough.
Yeah, exactly. I'm always, even if it was like 99% there, it's the 1% that I'm always looking at. So I'm wondering, how does someone change that focus from it has to be perfect to this self-compassion element that you mentioned earlier? How do I get myself to actually accept that, you know, this is
I think you're exhibiting some of the first signs of that is that you're recognizing that, you know, that you don't really like how you're responding to things, you know, and that it's taking away some of the joy of the things that you are doing. So then, you know, from there kind of comes a little bit of a commitment and a willingness that, you know, maybe I'm willing to work on this. And I love metaphors, but like, let's look at it this way. So, you know, a soundboard, right? I'm sure you've got one, and you've got, right now you've got that critic lens of, was this good enough? It's turned way up, right? You know, doesn't take the, when you're speaking, when you're doing these things and everything like that, it's not stopping you, but it's turned way up, and this is what's evaluating what you did after the fact, right? So what I would encourage is to start to do the things to start to bring the compassionate slider up, right? And this one won't disappear, but what will eventually happen is this one will start to lower, right? And this one will start to be the automatic kind of response. And like, so many people are afflicted by exactly what you're talking about. And that was like a big impetus for me to write the book, because I have lived experience with this, you know. So one of the things that helped me is, a lot of it is perception, like shifting my perspective. But so I was told about the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow when I was a little kid, right? And I was, oh, wouldn't that be cool? And every time I saw a rainbow, I'd be like, ooh, I wonder if I could get to the pot of gold. And then I think I spent my life living like, oh, you know, like, I got to get to that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, you know? And I would set goals and I wouldn't even pause. I would hit that goal and then I would set the next goal and then I would set the next goal. But I wasn't actually getting to enjoy, you know, the journey. And so the metaphor in the book that I talk about is the rainbow. It's like, you know what? The pot of gold actually isn't real. And mindfulness, that concept of being in the moment, is like, holy friggin' crow, I am standing underneath a beautiful rainbow. You know, this is life, whether it's raining out or it's cloudy or it's storming, it's still this beautiful rainbow. So when we can stop measuring our success about it being good enough, or are we ever going to get to that pot of gold, and actually recognize the true treasure is in the moment, in the journey, right? So that slider would respond to you, to you showing up at an event and doing that, and it would go like, wow, you know, you were scared and you still had some amazing things to say, and like, holy crumb, did you ever think that you would be doing these kinds of things? And oh wow, I think, you know, what you had to say was really able to help a lot of people, right? Like that's another voice that could come in and respond to that. But it would, the compassionate aspect is, it does take into consideration. It's just like, yeah, I know you're really programmed and used to like looking for what went wrong, and really used to looking at, you know, maybe I'm not good enough, or where do I have to do better? And I appreciate that, because that's helped me get places in my life. But at this point, I would actually really like to also, like, you know, be able to celebrate the things that I'm doing a little bit more, and meet myself with like this appreciation and gratitude and awe for the things that I'm doing. And truthfully, like, well, I guess I have a question for you. If you did it, so you go to this conference and you speak, right? And you just nailed it. It was absolutely perfect. What do you think the outcome of that would be, that would be so much better than the outcomes you're already getting?
I don't know. I guess maybe some more people would want to connect with me. And sometimes I get that. Like sometimes I do feel on fire and I am, you know, like, well, like health-wise, and I feel empowered and inspired, and I really do feel like I did really, really well. And people do come up to me and say like, oh my God, let's connect. And I think what the outcome I would get is perhaps more connections, more inspired connections, and more people that really genuinely want to connect with me and want to do business with me. And that's probably what I would get.
So what if you were to meet yourself with a little bit of patience where you're at? And 'cause if you really look at that, right? What would happen if you were inundated with more people than you could actually respond to? What would happen if your business grew quicker than you were able to keep up with? What would happen? Like, you know, do you really need it to go? Do you really need those results yet? Or
I think yes, because anyhow, let's say out of 100 connections, only a smaller number will actually do something, like, you know.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I think it can be hard to, you know, and this is where maybe I still have more to learn, because, you know, I'm doing things for the sake of integrity, and I'm doing for the sake of being authentic to myself, you know, and then we will see what that generates or whatever. But there are a lot of people very successful in business, and you deal with them, and that's something that you're trying to be. So I think there is probably a fine balance there between pushing for more and being okay with what you have. And, you know, actually just last night I was listening to the seven spiritual principles of success by Deepak Chopra, you know, and he sort of solidifying some of the ideas that I'm saying, that if we tie into that area of ourselves where we truly have something to offer, you know, and you know when you're in the zone, like you're on fire, right? And we attract people. That's what happens, right? Like we lose track of time, we're deeply engaged, we're on fire, and we attract people to us, right? And that's the sweet spot. And then we don't have to be pressing harder or whatever to draw abundance into our lives. It's going to naturally be drawn to us. Douglas Adams, I think he had a line. He's like, how to fly. The trick to flying is you got to throw yourself at the ground and miss. And that always sort of like, that's to me, that's, we want to be our authentic selves. And to me, that really means having a very attuned relationship to ourselves and working with those insecurities and fears and not good enough and everything like that, so that energetically we really are creating this embodied self-love, self-worth kind of energy that is going to attract those things to ourselves and and put it out there, but also, you know, do all these practical kinds of things that will allow us to grow our business and be successful in the ways that we want to, right? But I think that foundation of just accepting yourself exactly where you are and learning how to love yourself unconditionally. I think most people who are successful have that, you know?
Thank you. Tell us, how did you improve the quality of your life by improving your relationship with yourself? Did you notice any miracles happen as a result, or any positive results, or for you or your clients?
Oh yes, absolutely. Like I had thought that I was thriving, in about 2016, and you know, I had done a lot of work on myself. I'd stepped up. I was being a coach. I was like working out all the time, and I was a vegan and eating really well. I'd lost 80 pounds. I had all these great signs of success. I had a successful, like I had a lot of people coming to me for coaching, and you know, I was helping everybody improve their relationship with themselves, and it all fell apart. it just crashed. And you know, what I didn't know for me was that I had built it kind of on a foundation of trauma. I thought that I had healed what I needed to heal, but I really hadn't. And what I called it a breakdown, but it actually turned out to be a breakthrough, because what I learned was that my feeling good about myself and my life was really tied into all those things that I was doing. You know, they were the metrics of success, and they allowed me to feel like super good about myself. And, you know, my concept of spirituality was like, I'm doing all the right things, so things are going to continue to go well. And, you know, it all fell apart, and it kind of had to, for me to learn. One, I needed to really be willing to do things differently. Two, that the relationship with myself really, really had to come first, you know, and that was going to be about learning to be in relationship with all these aspects of myself I had always tried to overcome by getting rid of. That actually creates a chaos and a disconnection on the inside, whereas a radical acceptance and unconditional regard for all these parts of myself creates an internal harmony, you know, and that learning how to navigate the critic in that, not trying to get rid of, but in a way that it can acknowledge it, but doesn't let it run the show, you know. And then having these understanding that these unrealistic approaches to change, like, you know, stand at the bottom of the staircase, know I want to get to the top of the staircase, and I leap, you know, and I either get there in one foul leap or two, and what always would happen, what I would fall back, end up falling back down to the, because I wasn't ready to be there. I actually have to take it one step at a time. I can move pretty quickly, but I have to take it one step at a time, because I build the confidence, the agency, and even the nervous system safety to be where I am, to get where I'm going. And it prevents me from like going way far back. I might take a step backwards to get comfortable again before moving forward again, you know, and accepting, I had to accept, I came to accept, and almost with a sense of humor, that perfectionism is there is no perfect, like, you know. And so trying to do things perfectly, you know, or instant transformation, is just actually a big waste of my time that keeps me cycled in guilt and shame. And you know, if I'm coming from a place of pressure, and I'm coming from a place of like my self-worth being conditional on what I'm doing, then I don't actually get to enjoy life. So, you know what, I've been able to make my breakdown, I stopped functioning, I had amnesia, I was just really not, and I have built myself back up. But now I'm on a solid foundation, which I'm much better understanding. I have a much better understanding of grief. I have a much better understanding of change. And this has allowed me to meet people where they're at. And only, I always had insight and compassion and empathy for other people, but learning how to have it for myself is a game changer. And I connect even deeper with people. You know, I'll have people stay on after courses or classes and stuff like that, and they'll just be like, wow, thank you so much for sharing that, you know, I was so ashamed about that in myself, and you just made that really safe for me. Or, oh, I've never, you know, I've never really felt understood or heard or seen, you know. And then for the idea not to be that they have to continue to get it from me, but I actually can help people learn how to give it to themselves. Like that's amazing. You know, that's that for me to be able to be in the world and have that gift. And then what I didn't expect to arise out of this healing and this new concept of wholeness that embraces and embodies all these aspects of myself is that my creativity came back, but it came back huge. Like my to-do list of projects that I have is just like through the roof, and it's constantly, you know, and I wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning with more ideas, and I'm having a blast like that. The book, The Light Switch Myth, you know, it came, I came home from a coaching session and I had used the light switch myth again to talk to a client about this idea of instant transformation. And I just thought, you know, I should put that in a book and share it with more people. And then so the and you know like I wrote actually a fun novella at Christmas time just as a side project, and I've got all these different kinds of creativity just bubbling up. And I don't know about you, but patience was always a word that kind of bothered me, you know, because I didn't really have true patience, you know. And now I have legitimate patience for myself, which also makes creating any kind of change, because it's just like there's so many places I'd like to be, so many things I would like to do, and yet I can meet myself in the moment and go like, okay, I know, but like, you know, let's just be here. Let's keep working towards it, and I can be patient as I get there. And you know what for me has replaced the criticism by and large is actually I tend to respond to myself now with curiosity rather than that like, oh, you messed up kind of judge, which really is not helpful. I'll tend to go, wonder what happened there. What went on there, you know, and what could we do about that, you know, which is an entirely different kind of conversation I'm having with myself. And I would have never thought that I could actually like totally rewire these things inside myself, but I have, and it's way more. I love being me. I love spending time on my own, and I love helping people. So that's where my quality of life has come from, because there's a true, genuine love for myself, and there's all these in owning all of the aspects I didn't want to own. It seems like all of the ones that are gifts to me have just gotten stronger and louder and more present.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs and people worldwide can connect with you.
I call it my wellness hub, but towardswellness.ca is pretty much the main place where you can find out about the books and the journals and the course and the coaching and other kinds of things like that. I also have a lightswitchmyth.me just for the book, but I would go to towardswellness.ca. You can also Google Charisma Veer, and I show up. I'm still at the level of not so famous that if you reach out to me, I'll answer back, and I'm happy to have conversations with people. I'm always happy to offer an ear or just connect and support one another.
Thank you. Follow me for more interviews with world's most innovative health change makers to live your healthiest life ever.